The Nick Scott Effect.
The Nick Scott Effect.
Nick Scott.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and DJNickScott.com.
One day I'll have a studio as nice as yours.
I'm in a basement with a laundry and workout and HVAC. This is a backdrop.
That's great.
There's nothing that nice. You have a whole facility you could use.
Right. That's true. But then I would have to stay at work till 8:30.
Well, you already do, don't you?
Again.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're rolling. And for those that don't know, I'm joined by John King. He's the executive pastor of Bible Center. I'm so flattered that you took the time to talk to me for a little bit on the podcast. I mean, you've talked about podcasting and, you know, the church's podcast and my podcast and how, you know, I'm trying to grow mine. And there's maybe some things in the works with your church and everything. So it's pretty cool to have the two worlds come together here tonight and have you join me.
Honored to do so. And what's up, everybody in Nick Scotland? Good to see you.
Nick Scotland. We're going to copyright that.
Nick Scotland. That's a country, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I wanted, for those that might not be familiar with you and who you are and what you do in Bible Center, I figured I'd give you a few moments to kind of introduce yourself, and then we can dive into some of the meat and potatoes if you like.
That's great. So my job with the church is I'm called an executive pastor, and lots of people ask me what that means, and I tell them it's the junk drawer of pastoring. Everybody has a junk drawer, you know, where you go and you're never sure what's going to be in there. And so that's my job, you know, all the stuff that you're never sure what the day's going to be, but I get to lead our team and lead our staff and at the present time help lead our church. And so it's a lot of fun. Started as a youth pastor, became a family pastor, spent some time in South Florida, spent some time in Dayton, Ohio, and then in Los Angeles, California, and now back home here in Charleston, West Virginia. So it's good to be part of it.
Hold up. You were in Dayton?
I was in Dayton for 2 years.
Did I tell you that's pretty much where I grew up? I don't remember if I told you that.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you were kind of in between Cincinnati and Dayton, right?
Yeah. What part of Dayton were you in?
Yeah, we lived in Springboro.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My wife jokes with me because we picked our house because there was a Donato's pizza and a Grater's ice cream.
Donato's and Grater's. That's it, man.
Yeah.
So my dad actually got a job in Dayton. And he lived in Moraine. You know where that is? Mm-hmm. And I used to go spend weekends and weeks with him in the summer. And we would go to the Miamisburg pool and swim.
Yep.
And then when I played football and, well, Little League baseball and then football later on, we played Franklin, Springboro, Waynesville, Lebanon, all that area. So you're familiar with that whole area.
And yeah, Springboro is still kind of the new growing community when we lived there. So kind of just had grown outside of Centerville and Kettering and all area.
I was
into Springboro.
I was born in Kettering.
Well, there you go.
That explains everything. No, I'm kidding.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you're familiar with Middletown, of course, right?
Oh, yeah.
My first radio on-air gig was at a radio station that had a name that would not fly in 2022. It was The Rebel 105.9. In Middletown, Ohio. I did overnights. It was my first job out of college. 2002 to 2000. Something just grabbed my foot. It's a cord. I was like, what is that? 2002, 2003. So I had no idea. Maybe you told me and it went through one ear and out the other. That does happen with me. And for that, I apologize.
Maybe. It was quick. We were there literally 2 years, like barely 2 years. But it was when my middle child started kindergarten there.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, it's, you talk about middle America, small town USA, the school bus picked her up at our driveway.
Yep.
To go to kindergarten, first day of kindergarten.
Yeah.
Which for my a mama, that's tough. Same,
so, By the way, delicious H2O tonight in the Yoda cup, if anyone's wondering.
You're good. You're looking good then.
I'm telling you. So how did you always know that you were called into ministry or how did you become a pastor?
Man, that's a great question. I mean, so much to it. And the answer is no. I'm what many people would call a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed college, everything but the classes. that kind of stuff. And so I think when I lost my dad, when I was 11 years old. And so there was some impact in my life throughout my middle school years and my high school years by different people in particular that were part of the church and actually Bible Center. That's where I grew up. So lots of people at Bible Center that impacted my life when I was a teenager. And I think that stuck with me. When I graduated from high school, I just knew I wanted to work with teenagers and I wasn't really sure how. Played sports, all that stuff. So thought maybe coaching would be it. But when Emily and I got married, we ended up in South Florida and we were both teachers to start out with. So I taught various things. I started with elementary physical education, which is crazy and fun. And she started in second grade and taught for about 4 years and just kind of realized that teaching wasn't for me, but working with students was. The relationship that teachers can have sometimes and pastors can have are maybe a little bit different. And so I was wired a little differently than a teacher. And so a friend of mine just said, hey, a church is looking for a youth pastor. Would you be interested part-time? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And I thought we were there for a year, just kind of an interim thing. And I thought we were going to be there forever and the church was going to hire us full time. And God called me to ministry and here we go. And that was it. And the end of that year came and they said, well, we can't keep you. And so I was kind of bummed, but God used that year in my life to really just say, this is what I want you to do. And so within 6 months, I was on staff at a different church as a youth pastor. And then from there, it's just kind of different passions that have emerged as I've gotten older to where I do what I do now. But I think he used that particular year in my life. I think it was about 27 years old. Oh, wow. when I felt like this is, you know, God's called me to do this with my life.
Well, you're only like 32 now, so.
Exactly. Yeah. It's 3-4 years ago.
Well, and it has to be an amazing feeling to have grown up in a church and then later in your life, full circle moment, come back in a leadership role at that same church. I mean, I would have to venture that doesn't happen very often. So that has to be a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah. And I think when that all came about, that was what I couldn't escape. Just I felt like this church in particular, this church, the people that call Bible Center home, and there's still many of them from when I was a kid that are still there. The way they invested in me and my family, my mom, as we went through that just difficult season in our life, the honor of then in just being able to return in any way or in some way, kind of a thankfulness by serving them, that just kind of blew me away when that opportunity came along. A lot of people think about, you know, it'd be nice to go home and be part of that. But for me, it's pretty deep. It means a lot to be able to walk those halls and serve those people.
Do you think Bible Center is where the Lord's going to use you for the remainder of your tenure, the remainder of your working days?
Wow, that's like looking for a scoop, man.
Well, I mean, here's where that question comes from. You do have the, if you want to call it pedigree, you grew up there, you got the family ties.
Right.
You're well-traveled. Yep. And you've come back and you've kind of worked your way, if you want to call it working up the ladder there.
Right. Right.
I don't know if that's appropriate terminology to use in a church reference.
It works.
But
yeah,
sure.
People get it.
And so to me, if from the outside looking in, you are kind of what I feel would be a face of Bible Center, not in terms of like, the face, if you want to talk about a pastor, but like a face of, hey, look at this guy. He was a youth. He was a child. He, from the ground up until the age he is now, plus through leadership. I mean, this is exactly. Uh-oh, I lost you. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it just seems like you are a absolute product of Bible Center.
Right.
So that's where that question kind of comes from.
I would agree with that. I think in many ways I'm in ministry today because the people at Bible Center cared enough when I was a teenager to invest in me that way. So they were the first people in my life to introduce me to that concept of even thinking about church ministry. So I don't have plans to be anywhere else. I love it here, and our family loves it here. And it could be that we're here for the rest of our career if the Lord would lead us that way. And I'm a West Virginia boy and love all things mountains and rivers. So
yeah.
There are worse places to be, especially in the summer.
That is true. And fun fact about John that I learned after I got to meet him and got to know him, you were a whitewater rafting guide. Or still do that, right?
I still get to do that. Not as much this summer, just a couple trips this summer. But the New River is my home, man. In college, that was my summer job in college. And it's one of those things when I did my last trip, you know, because I'm going away, I'm getting married, you know, starting life, all that stuff. Did my last trip, and I thought I'll probably never be out here again. And then to come back, move back here and get asked to come down and guide again has just been amazing. The New River Gorge is the best place on the planet as far as I'm concerned.
I think I shared this story with you. It's, you know, I've been in West Virginia now since 2006. So what am I at, 17 years now, something like that? And
you're a native at this point.
At this point, I am. And I feel like an adopted West Virginian. I really do. People... You know, side note, whenever I do national radio, whether it be Kid Craddock or Sirius XM or any of these other stations, or even some of the stations down in Texas I'm lucky to do some stuff for, when they introduce me, they say, Nick Scott from Charleston, West Virginia.
And there you go.
I never correct them. You know, I'm like, no, I'm from Cincinnati. But, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, I mean, there's, 4 million people that live in the metro of Cincinnati, and that's more than the entire state of West Virginia. So the way I look at it is, if I could in some way bring a positive light to West Virginia, I mean, I'm proud to do that, you know.
It's a unique place.
Yeah.
You know, those of us that live here understand that. You don't really get it until you're here and you spend some time here, but it's a unique place.
But the story I think I shared with you is being here all those years, where I was going with that is I've always wanted to whitewater raft. I've never had the ability. Mm-hmm. And I, before my wife and I had kids, I asked my wife, I don't know, a couple dozen times. And even since we've had kids, I've asked her, and she has told me she will never, ever, 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 ever go, because she went one time with her family and the guide, the guide,
right?
Purposely flipped everybody off the raft.
Yeah.
And she thought she was going to die, and that was it. So, I'm at this point waiting for my daughter to get a little bit older so I can I could take her. I have someone to go with me.
Well, let's roll.
I'd love to.
I'll get you on a boat and we'll get down there.
So one thing I did want to discuss is real quick. We've talked about Bible Center a lot. There could be folks listening, and there's probably a very good chance they have no idea what we're talking about. What is Bible Center? So, and I maybe should have mentioned that earlier, so I apologize, but tell us just a quick little bit about Bible Center.
So Bible Center is a local church, a non-denominational local church that's just kind of grown up with the city of Charleston, planted about 78 years ago by a businessman downtown Charleston in a department store, has moved several locations to where we are now at Southridge campus. And now we exist in three physical locations, one church location, but then our school and what we call the Maker Center on the west side, and then multiple digital spaces that we're in as well now, as everybody is. But just a church that really kind of has been a light and made a difference in the city of Charleston, surrounding area, Kanawha Valley, for a long, long time, long history of supporting this area and ministering in this area. So it's an awesome, awesome thing to be a part of it.
There we go. I lost you for a second, but we caught the tail end. I got you now. And in the show notes, I'm going to put links to Bible Center. I'm going to put links to your social so folks can check you out and check out Bible Center and see what it's about. We do have a lot of folks that listen in from other states. So when he was talking about the three different locations, they have the newer church that was built in the last 15 years or so. And then their old church, I still got you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. It keeps cutting out just a little bit, but we're okay. We're good. Their older church building. Check. What's that?
Let me check my cell signal real quick.
Got to get on that Wi-Fi, son.
I know. I was on the Wi-Fi, but I think that's the thing that's messing up.
Oh.
Okay.
Take your time.
I
can edit some of this, so take your time.
Scholes, so.
Yeah, I can edit some of this, so take your time.
There you go. Okay, I switched it over. That should be a little cleaner.
Cool. So their old campus, their older building, is now their school. It's K through 8th grade, if I'm not mistaken.
K through 8th grade.
And then the Makers Center, when he says the west side, that's on the west side of Charleston. Real quick, what's the Makers Center do?
So the Makers Center is a creative space that does kind of life skills training. And it's similar to joining a gym. You know, if you want to go work out, you can join the Maker Center and have access to 3D printing and wood shop and Cricuts and glow forges and all kinds of just creative space. We use it. People in our church teach sewing. They teach floral design. We do driver's ed out of there. We help lots of people who are in recovery, trying to get kind of their life back on track. So it's a fantastic ministry over on the west side.
That's incredible. So now that we got the introductions out of the way, I do want to tell two quick kind of funny stories for you and I. You know, I've shared this story on the podcast before. I won't do a whole deep dive into it. There's a podcast out there. You can listen to mine. I think it's episode 30, kind of details my history with religion. But it took me 22 years to come back to even the idea of walking into a church, not the idea of restarting, if you want to call it restarting, my faith was not even on the table. You know, that's how kind of resentful and bitter I had become. And I shared the story of Easter. I woke up, had this pull to take my children to church because my son didn't know the story of Jesus. And my daughter really only knew it because she went to Awana's with some neighbors. And I felt like a terrible dad. I just felt like I was failing as a parent. So we went. Like I said, I've shared this story, so I'm trying to just give the bullet points here. We went. We loved it. My daughter just fell in love with what they call Base Camp, which is the children's church at Bible Center. Fell in love with Pastor Steve Neal, who's an amazing guy. She hounded me to come back. And, of course, that hardened heart of mine of 22 years was like, no. But She kept on me, and I thank God she did. You know, she kept on me. And I reached out to a member of your church and said, hey, I'd like to have a conversation. They put me in touch with you, and we set up a time to have lunch. Mm-hmm. Now, I tell this whole long kind of buildup to say, I really only wanted to talk to you about the children's church. Like, are you background checking? Are there, like, locks on the doors? Like, who are these people I'm leaving my kids with? Like all the super helicopter dad stuff, right?
All good questions, though.
They are good questions, but that's just the type of dad I am. And our lunch meeting, first of all, I have to thank you because you showed me street tacos.
Yeah, life changing.
That changed my world.
Yeah.
And second, our 45
minute. You're going to have to link to a recipe for street tacos in the show notes now.
and shout out to La Roca's in Charleston because I've had street tacos at about five other places and they have the best. They're amazing.
Yeah, there you go.
But our conversation was only supposed to be about 45 minutes and it ended up to be almost 3 hours we sat there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the conversation went through my past and history and things I was taught as a kid. Growing up in a very Pentecostal church, and I'm not knocking anyone who believes Pentecostal, but for me, it was on the extreme side of that, you know. And when I left there, every fear, every, I don't know what word you want to use, like all the voices in my head, if you want to say that, they were like, don't do it, don't do it, don't go, don't do it, were silent.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, like all those fears had gone away. So that was my first impression of John King. And I want to say, like, you, it, I mean, made a great impression that day on me, a life-changing impression on me that day.
Likewise.
Mine probably not so good.
Impression of the Nick Scott as well.
I'm so sorry, by the way. So, and then we went golfing.
Yeah.
Because I have to tell this one. This is another funny John King story. So that Easter Sunday, I've never sat in a service at Bible Center. It's my first time. And this is all new to me. And we're sitting there. And here comes this guy out on the pulpit after the band is finished. And it's John walking out to deliver the sermon. And the first thing he says is, does anyone here love to play golf? And I went, and I was the only one, like 400 or 500 people. And my wife goes, put your hand down. I was like,
yep, we are a dying breed.
But here's the thing. Here's why I tell that story. And it's funny to think about it. But my wife, if you ask her now, she goes, that was the moment I knew. Like, I knew he was going to love these people and he was going to love coming here. So we went golfing. And this is the last funny story I'll tell. We went golfing, and both of us are amateur golfers. We're not pros. But I remember we were on hole number 9 in the fairway, and the way the hole turns, it turns to the right up a hill, and there's all kinds of trees. Even if you hit a perfect drive, you have trees right in front of you. You got to bend around to the right. And I had this small window with a 3-wood, and I was like, there's about a 2% chance I can get it through that window. And even you were like, bro, you need to lay up. You're not going to get it through there. And I remember you were like, I don't know, should you lay up? And I was like, huh? And I took out the 3-wood. I said, ah, screw it. And I laced it perfectly right through that window, almost to the green. Yep. And I remember walking back to the cart like, take that, John King.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you call yourself amateur. That's not amateur.
That, hey, what's it say? A blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while?
Maybe, I guess.
But so far, we've shared some great moments, and I appreciate that of you. One other thing that I appreciate is I mentioned what I was brought up in as far as church and the Pentecostal, and I've said this in other podcasts. I don't want anyone to feel like I'm talking bad about them or putting down anyone that follows that ideology. So please don't take it that way. But in the 90s, when I was coming up through it, it was a very, like, I don't want to, is the word totalitarian too much? Like, it was very, you know, and
it is hard religion.
Very hard. And one thing I have grown to love so much about what you and Mike and everyone at Bible Center do is when you guys deliver your sermons, it's more of just a conversation. You're not, you're not yelling at people. You're not, you know, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So if I could ask, what is the thought behind that? How did you learn to do that? Because that was so new to me when I came to Bible Center, but it's so much more effective than the yelling I got in Pentecostal church. So I've always been curious about that.
Yeah, I think in some ways it's just our style, just kind of me. Mike would probably say the same thing. To be anything other than just who we are, just feels weird.
Sure.
I'm kind of like you. I tend to do better with conversation. Lets me think. Lets me analyze what's going on. Gives me a chance to process what's coming out. I think it's just style. I'd also say probably the first guy I ever worked for in ministry, the guy that gave me my shot as a youth pastor, that was him. He was a lot like that. He'd come up on a stool, with a table, you know, and this was, you know, 75 years ago. this would have been, mid 2000s though. Mm-hmm. Very conversational even then. We actually attended that church before I was ever on staff because I was drawn to him and his teaching and the way he taught and all that. And so I think I probably adopted some of that. It's got, you know, I've got my own little stuff I can get excited here and there, and hopefully some passion comes out. But I think that style, just especially as a youth pastor, when you're talking with students, that's just kind of the way you do it. So,
and you're right there. In my opinion, and in my experience, experiencing both of those worlds, I feel more drawn to that conversational type. You know, I feel like I've left there actually stuff sticking between here, you know, more so than someone barking at you and you walk out the door like eyes glazed over. You know what I'm saying? So that was always very intriguing to me. And I love that you guys do that. And I think it's far more impactful. Another thing I wanted to touch on, and I think so many people need to hear this, and it's amazing to me, because when I heard it live, and then later in the week, I saw it posted on social media, and it was one of those moments where I was like, I wasn't the only one who caught that. Mm-hmm. You opened a sermon with Jesus is not mad at you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put the link to the Instagram post from Bible Center in the show notes, where people can see that exact live segment of you. And you, mm-hmm. you started the sermon with that. And I don't, if I remember correctly, it had nothing to do with what you were going to talk about. Like you said it, you paused, and then you got into your lesson. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I don't know if the people here, and some may have, but I remember when you said that, knowing my journey, mm-hmm. I don't think people realize how impactful that is and how many people need to hear that. And then 3-4 days later, I see it pop up on Instagram, clipped mm-hmm. by the church, and I was like, someone else had the same thought I did. More people need to hear that. So if you could maybe re-explain that, because I feel like so many people, especially my age, I'm 40, grew up in mm-hmm. the church in the 90s. So many people have this feeling that Jesus is mad at them. Jesus is upset with them. Maybe it's because of their lifestyle. Maybe it's because of some of the choices they've made. Maybe it's because they battle with something, whether it be addiction, what have you. So, you know, if you can explain mm-hmm. that a little bit.
Yeah, it's I think it's something we all struggle with, and it's probably has to do with our relationships here on this planet. We're used to people getting mad at us if we mess up or we do something that they would consider to be wrong. That's one of the typical responses that we have ourselves for others when that happens. I think that day when we were talking about that, I was coming back from camp. We had been at camp with the students. You came down for that last night.
Oh, it was incredible.
Did a session.
It was incredible.
But just you kind of spend a week with students, and you get to hear their heart and what they're dealing with and what they're struggling with. And just that concept of if I do something, this relationship that I have with Jesus, if I do something wrong, he's ready to just punish me. Like that's the relationship I think sometimes we have. But if you think about it, people don't die for people they're mad at. Like if you're going to die for somebody, like that's next level. Like you're dying for somebody because you care so deeply about them. And you go through the list of people that you might be willing to die for, you know, in your life. And you think about the relationship that you have there. And it is not one that's characterized by anger, no. or disappointment, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's characterized by love. It's characterized by pursuit. It's characterized by kindness. It's characterized by all of those things. And so when Jesus came to the earth and lived the perfect life, died the perfect death for us, he didn't do it because he was mad. He did it because he loves us more than we could even love ourselves. And so to walk around with this idea in our head that that's what he's after conformity, or he's after, if you don't do what I say, then I'm going to strike you or smite you or whatever it might be, just doesn't line up with the Jesus that you read about in the Gospels, in the Bible. That Jesus who came for us and died for us was proving over and over again how much he loves us. And that's the drive there. That's why he did what he did.
Absolutely. And that's one thing, you know, I've shared with friends of mine who grew up with me, that grew up, we were in the same youth groups and stuff back when we were kids. And a lot of them left church with some of the same kind of resentful feelings as we became adults. And we've kept in touch and talked. And the one thing we always come back to and back on is if the teaching when we were youth in the pastors back then, even in the Pentecostal church, if they had done it with one thing, one key thing, it could have changed everything. And you just hit the nail on the head. It was with love, mm-hmm. with love.
Right.
If there had been mm-hmm. more teaching of love and more of that spirit of love and the stories of Jesus and the love. I can't say that enough. I think more people need to hear and understand that are there stories in the Bible of God's wrath? Absolutely. There are,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of that's also in the Old Testament. Am I wrong?
Well, the beautiful thing about what Christ did, what Jesus did for us is he satisfied God's wrath.
Exactly. That was
because
the point I was getting to.
We don't have the ability to satisfy God's wrath. It had to be satisfied somehow. So out of his love for us, he took our spot.
Exactly.
So literally he like jumped the line and said, hey, do it to me instead of to them. Which is why I continue to say, like, he's not mad.
Exactly.
Any kind of transformation that takes place in our life then is motivated by love.
Absolutely.
It's not motivated by fear.
Absolutely.
Like I don't have to change because I'm nervous that he's going to leave me or he's going to be mad at me. I change because, oh my goodness, he gave up everything for me.
Absolutely.
So it's a totally different motivation.
And that makes so much sense. It's one of those things like, you know, I'm sitting here 40-year-old Nick talking to you. Well, it's mm-hmm. like deep down inside 12-year-old Nick is going, where was this when I was around? You know what
yeah.
I mean? And there's a chance some of my old church people might watch this. And again, I'm not hammering on anybody, so I don't want anyone mm-hmm. to get offended. But
hey, we're all on that journey, man.
Exactly. Another thing I did put out there, if someone I said I'm having a very notable popular pastor on the podcast tonight. I don't know if you saw
that.
Oh,
wow. There you go.
But, and I said,
who's that? Can I meet him?
I said, do you have any questions you would like to ask? And if you want to ask anonymously, uh-huh. you can DM me. So this person chose to, whoops. Okay, we're good. I thought I just did something. This person chose to message me privately, so I won't say their name. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly fine. But they yeah. said, how do I know I'm saved? And
that's a good question.
And me and you, if you remember our very first meeting at lunch, I asked that question. And in just a little bit of context, mm-hmm. the way that I was taught as a child, backsliding was a real thing. If you're not sure what backsliding means, it means, you know, you're saved 1 minute, you do a sin or there's a sin, and then you're backslidden and you're no longer in salvation anymore, and if you were to die at that moment, you're going to go to hell. And I, if you remember when we had that meeting, I lived a pretty wild life before I got married. Nightclubs, mm-hmm. DJ, all that stuff. I was into some crazy things that I'm kind of ashamed of now that I have kids. But you know, when you're 21, it is what it is.
We can just be glad Facebook and Instagram didn't exist back when we were kids.
I'm so glad there's no evidence. So I firmly believed that I was going straight to hell. No questions. But I was saved when I was 14. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was on fire for the Lord afterwards, if you will. I led a youth Bible study at my junior high, which I can't imagine that would be allowed now in 2022. But but so I felt to that point at then 39 years old when we met that I was going to hell because of the lifestyle that I had lived. And mm-hmm. you told me that's simply not the case. So in reading this question, I feel that has the same kind of tone to it, if you can explain mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I think just really simply, without going into all kinds of verses and all that stuff, but really simply, When you trust Christ for your salvation, it's on him to save you. It's an acknowledgement that I can't do it, that there's a broken relationship between me and God, and I need Jesus to restore that. And so to believe that I can somehow lose that then by something I would do basically says I'm not trusting in Jesus, that he's not enough for me, that it's Jesus and something I've got to do in order to be saved. And so to me, when I read the New Testament, and in particular places like Ephesians chapter 2, I just don't see salvation being dependent on me and what I can bring to the table, because I think that cheapens what Christ did for us on the cross when he took our spot. So it's all about Jesus. I mean, it's absolutely all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus when we get saved. It's all about Jesus after we get saved. It'll be all about Jesus in eternity. Like, it's all about Jesus. And I can't do enough to either keep my salvation or lose my salvation, because it's all about him.
Now, what would you say the old, you know, charismatic Christian kid of the 90s in me wants to say, okay, and this is me being devil's advocate.
Right.
What would you say when someone says, okay, well, does that mean it's a get out of jail free card? You have salvation, but does that mean now you can go do all of the sexual promiscuity, drugs, what have you? What would you say to someone who would ask you that question?
Yeah, I would again go, so after salvation, I would go to places that talk about fruit in your life, which is basically evidence. You know, when a tree, when an apple tree has apples growing off of its branches, it's evidence that it's an apple tree. And so for a Christian, for someone who actually truly knows Jesus, there's going to be life change that happens because the Holy Spirit lives in you now. Mm-hmm. And so he's not just going to sit in the corner idly while you just live your life. Does that mean you're never going to struggle with stuff? No, it means you're going to struggle the rest of your life. But you're going to be able to see that life change over time. You're gonna be more loving. You're gonna be more kind. You're gonna be more patient. You're gonna, like, and maybe you start way down the list, or maybe you, that's not something you struggle with right away, and so it's harder to tell. But for a person who actually trusted Jesus with their life, that is going to take place in their life over time. And there might be gaps in that, like even your story. Like, to me, your evidence that you've been saved this whole time, like he brought you back. You know what I mean? So there might be gaps, there might be moments, but you're going to see over time.
You're paused.
Yeah, hold on.
There we go.
There we go. You're going to see over time that life change take place. And so that's one of the evidences that the writers in the New Testament give us, that tell us that we are saved.
Well,
it's one of the things you can look at.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing that's funny, when I mentioned in that story that on Easter, I just felt this, it was like a pulling, you know, and I do remember at some point that day, and I think it was during service, once we were there and the singing was going on and you were, you know, given the lesson and everything, there was a point where I really felt like it's been enough time now, you know, I've got work for you.
Yeah.
Or it's about time. Let's get started. You know, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but that was the feeling, like, all right, dude, like it's been enough time. Like we've got work to do. We got plans for you. Let's go. You know, it was kind of that feeling. And, you know, I've had some buddies, you know, especially some golf buddies that, you know, are used to me, being on the golf course, you know, slamming some Mick Ultra, some Coors Lights, and you know, every time I hit a bad shot, there's 27 F-bombs that follow. but, you know, it's funny. You say that the Holy Spirit works in you, and I really believe that, because, you know, you think that you would be conscious of those changes. Mm-hmm. But I have noticed, I've gone back and, like, reflected on moments where I'm like, you know, had I been confronted with that same situation 6 months ago, my reaction then versus my reaction now is completely different. And I'm not doing anything different. Does that make sense? Like, it's just a change in how I'm reacting to things, but it's a natural.
Yep.
It's hard to put into words. It's a natural change. Mm-hmm. You know, I hit a bad shot at the golf course the other day and I'm like, well, that sucks. Mm-hmm. And off I went. there was a time where I think we snapped over my knee and a whole bunch of colorful words, you know? I'm trying to, I guess, emphasize your point that, you know, there is a change. And there were times in that 22 years, you said once you're saved, he sticks with you. There were times in that 22 years where I felt the call and I felt the pull and I felt convicted and I felt whatever, but I just ignored it. Or I just said it was in my head. Like I was fabricating it. Like I was making it up in my own head, you know?
Right.
But now I look back and I'm like, you idiot, you know?
And one of the greatest examples of I don't bring anything to the table is honestly when Jesus was on the cross and there was a dude next to him who the writers of the New Testament just call him a thief. And all he does as he's dying, literally hanging on a cross, looks at Jesus and says, "Will you remember me today when you go to paradise?" And Jesus says basically back to him, "Yep, come on, man."
Yeah.
And like he didn't have time to do anything. He didn't have time to clean himself up. He didn't have time. Like he didn't go to church. Like, I mean, he's that evidence that like it's all on Christ. It's all on Christ.
And you are, I mean, of course you're right. You're a pastor, but you're right.
I don't know about that. Yeah, but that's not necessarily just the reason. Trying to be according to what the Bible teaches us. And there's a whole lot to that. There really are. And it's not to minimize what people struggle with and what they think about and what they see the Bible saying. But just when I read the Bible, I walk away with this picture of Jesus that is just magnificent. He's huge. He's everything. He's what we need. And he gave us the way. And so it's a full on lean into, fall into, trust in him. And in particular, I would say even in our culture now, you think about the levels of anxiety and depression as we're coming out of a pandemic season.
Yeah.
And I think a lot about teenagers who've had their school careers disrupted, college students, you know, who for two whole years had just very, very different life. And so those are things I think a lot of people struggle with in many different ways. And it's interesting to me when you read the account of Christ's life, you know, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke and John, as they write down what they witnessed and how Jesus lived his life, people that were hurting and people that were broken and people that were in need, Jesus always led with love, and care and compassion, and like over and over and over again throughout his life, you just see him, you read things like he sees the crowds and he's moved with compassion. You read things like, whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me, because that's what I would do. You read just all about that, every encounter that he had, he led that way with care and compassion. And he didn't hold back on truth, but there was so much care in it that the truth was heard. Exactly. And I think sometimes in our culture today, and you mentioned LGBTQ, and it's not even just that, it's kind of just culturally all over the place. I mean, you look at social media, you look at the news, you look at, we lead with harshness and we lead with yelling and we lead with finger pointing and we lead with the other side. And we put people in these categories, and No one, you, me, no one is going to listen to anything we have to say, true, not true, if that's what it's baked in or if that's what it's covered in.
Sure.
And when you look at the life of Christ, the only time he had harsh words, were for religious leaders. Like everyone else, even if it was truth, it was put in so much care and so much compassion that the person was able to hear it. And so there's got to be that. It's just, it's got a flavor. Kindness, we're talking about kindness with our staff right now. Kindness has just got to be something that flavors everything we do. Love has got to cover everything that we do. So I'm with you. I think that's a huge thing for us as we seek to, what we're doing, we're trying to share Christ's love.
Not to switch gears. I know we got about 10 minutes left here. So what I would like to do is I feel like, and I've felt this before, when someone is entertaining going to a church, how would you recommend getting around that nervousness? Or maybe they feel like if they go, they're going to be pressured to conform, or pressured to get saved on the spot, or pressured to whatever. What would you say to somebody who's listening to this? They've been kicking around the idea of going to church, but they haven't gotten over that nervous pressure fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, relationships help a lot with that. And so there are ways. So let's just take Bible Center, for instance. We can use that. There are ways to connect with Bible Center that are different than just coming on a Sunday morning. And so there's events that we do, on the campus that just for that reason. So we do a trunk or treat in the fall and do an Easter egg hunt and picnics and, all that kind of stuff, because it's a lower pressure way to just see that people are normal in some ways. And hey, these are just people that live in Charleston and love people and love hanging out and doing fun stuff too. And so we do a lot of stuff to try to break down those nervous walls, so to speak. Cause we all have them in different scenarios. So, I've got places where I'm going in that I'm like, oh my goodness. And so lots of places have to figure out how to do that. So we work really hard at that. We also, that's why we do a lot of the online stuff that we do. So you can kind of check it out in cyberspace before you even have to set foot on the campus.
Technology
you can take
is
in
awesome.
A service on TV before you even have to set foot on the campus, and you start to get to know a little bit of what it's going to be like. It used to be, probably when you were a kid, it was like this, you go to a church website back when they first came out, and it was, here's what to expect when you go, and here's what you should wear, and all that kind of stuff. And now you can just watch it.
Yep, you just watch it.
And so, so you have a great expectation of what it's going to be like. So we do everything we can to help on the front end with that. And then when you get there, a lot of it, when you get there, it turns into just volunteers, people that love people, helping people feel comfortable. So we try to do that even at the front doors, coffee. Someday we'll have donuts back again now that the pandemic's over. people are on me about that one.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Super donuts.
They love the donuts.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I blame them.
No.
But that's, at some point, though, I think it has to become like what you did. It has to become a moment where you say, you know what, this is that important. So yeah, I've got a little nervousness. Yeah, I've got a little anxiety, but it's worth it. And I'm gonna step out here and do this thing.
So if someone, and we're gonna zero this thing in a little bit, if someone's in the Charleston or Charleston region and they're interested in checking out Bible Center, how would you recommend they get started?
Well, the easiest way is just go to the website.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of stuff on the website. It'll take you to links about the services and all that stuff. If you don't want to do that, then WCHS at 10 a.m. on Sundays.
Yep.
Then you can see what we're all about. Watch it from your couch.
Now, the good and also kind of the bad thing about podcasting is these usually sit out there forever. So there's a chance someone might be listening to this 6 months or a year from now. So I know this past Sunday you mentioned service times changing. So if someone's listening to this, say in like November of this year, we may be on a different time schedule.
It'll likely be 11 o'clock.
So 9:30 and 11. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good to know. John, we're going to put all of the links in the show notes so you can check out Bible Center online. Dude, I don't know if I told you, but I got the notifications and the texts. I'm playing guitar again for three services this Sunday.
There you go. I'm so pretty pumped then. I'll be there in all three.
I'm pretty excited. And it's funny. Yeah. I've told.
I see you rocking your Taylor t-shirt. You're just repping
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Taylor, you can give me an endorsement anytime you like.
Right. I was going to say sponsorships from Taylor are welcome.
Always welcome. But you know, it's funny. I was telling a friend of mine, if there was a world of things you'd never seen ever coming, me playing guitar for Bible Center would be like right in the bullseye, but it's happened and it's amazing. And I tell you, when I left there, I think I finally left at like 12:30 on Sunday, and the feeling of joy, and everything that I had afterwards was just incredible. And I told Caleb, I was like, you put me in, coach, anytime you want.
You know? There you go. Well, he did.
So I'm excited to be there. John, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And again, you could check out John King and Bible Center in the show notes. You can see the links and check it out. And one last thing, correct me if I'm wrong, if someone wants to, for lack of a better term, book an appointment, they can say that they're coming as a guest, and you actually have a team that will meet them, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We'll do everything we can to make it as easy as possible.
Cool. All right, John. Well, I will see you Sunday, and thank you for doing this with me, my friend.
Thank you to the Nick Scott Effect.
That's going to be my new drop, my new tagline.